special Sunday night. The flag has been waved in South Florida. The cars have hit the speedway. There's been big ones and there's been little ones. Race fans, it's officially Speed Weeks, and here's our special show on this beautiful Sunday night down here in Central Mississippi. We'll have Mr. CJ Sports on, of course, Stats. Mike Perricone, he'll be on as well. Of course, my co-host and partner, the Craig Moore from New York, upstate New York. We'll have him on as well. I don't know who I was in the studio yet, but boys. It looks like 2018 is going to be full of action. And how about the breaking news that Ford will debut their new body in 2019? We'll start off with that, guys.
Chris, you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear there, Craig.
All right, just wanted to double check. How are you on this Sunday evening?
Oh, wonderful. You know, we've gotten some weather down here, some rain and all, but it's going
to
clear out. It's going to be 80 degrees next weekend. We are bringing South Florida's weather right here to Mississippi. So if anybody's around this area, make sure you get to Battle of the States next weekend. Why not Motorsports Park?
Can you send some of that about 1,200 miles north, east?
Yeah. To the contrary, Craig Moore, our co-host, you've had quite a blizzard on your hand this past week, haven't you?
Yeah, we got about 15 inches between Tuesday and Wednesday, and we're getting anywhere from 6 inches to 18 inches tonight and tomorrow. So I'll be playing a lot of NASCAR heat, too.
I hear you. Well, we run right up the eastern seaboard. We got Mike in Georgia and then CJ in North Carolina. We represent pretty much the whole eastern seaboard and Gulf Coast here. So how's the weather over there in Georgia, Stats?
Okay, as far as I know. So.
CJ Sports, you there?
I am. And it's a beautiful... It's a beautiful 75 degrees today, and it's still almost 70 degrees tonight here in North Carolina.
Beautiful. Hey, well, it's great season weather. Yeah, Craig, y'all are being left in the cold, literally. we're enjoying early spring down here in the South. So, well, guys, the round table is open. We want you to discuss what topics you want to bring to the table. I started it out. Ford's going to get a new body this year, at the end of this year. So they'll be making changes to their front nose piece and possibly debuting a new car on the track. I am in favor of the pony car, the Mustang, but I've heard some stories that it could be the GT, a new GT coming out. So I'm really excited about what Ford's going to be able to do for the 2019 season, and they looked pretty darn fast today in the Busch Clash. So, may I tell you, in the Clash, I should say, not the Busch Clash anymore, but old bones are not forgotten. What do y'all think about that? We'll start with you, Craig.
I think it's a good idea. I think it's about time. Like we said Thursday night, the Fusion has been around 5 or 6 years. So I think it's a good idea. By the way, we're live on Race Chat Live. If you guys want to share that out, that would be great. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see the pony. I'd like to see the Mustang come out. The Mustang come out and because that's what they're running in the Xfinity series. So it would make sense to bring that up, just like Chevy did the Camaro. Granted, it took a full year, which is that's what it's going to take Ford to do. I'm kind of shocked they didn't do it before this, but I think it was something that was in the making for a while, and that's why last week they weren't really that. When we talked 2 weeks ago, they weren't really complaining that much because they knew what was in the works and they knew what was coming. So I think it'll even up the field nice. I think they'll have a I think they'll have a pretty stout car in 2019.
Yeah, I don't think production is going to be much of a problem since most of these teams have 3D printing machines now. What they're going to be able to do, though, is they're going to be able to take that Toyota piece and take that Chevrolet piece, and they're going to be able to wind tunnel it and find out where the advantages are on both of those machines, and then Ford's going to be able to sit at the table and create something. I've heard even, and this may cut some of you for a flip, that maybe they would even do an SUV-type style car. So I remember the Dodge Magnum when it came out. It was, you know, pretty big seller the first couple of years. It did not last, but it's going to be interesting to see what Ford brings to the table. How about you, CJ Sports? What do you think about this topic?
I think they need to bring the Mustang up. I think I never understood why the Xfinity Series had these sexy-looking cars. And I'm sorry, but the Mustang and the Camaros, they compared to what we've been watching in the Monster Cup Series for the last few years, those things are sexy. And you're wanting to appeal to this younger generation to kind of build your popularity back up, and you got to put something out there that's appealing to a younger generation. And watching Camaros and Mustang kind of, I hate to say this, the muscle car of this generation compared to what we grew up with, what muscle cars. You got to put them hand in hand. And, you know, I'm glad to see Ford is continuing to step up the game. You know, it wasn't but a season or two ago, you know, we were talking about where is Ford at. And, you know, we kind of questioned what Stuart Haas was thinking signing over to Ford when Ford kind of fell off the face of the earth. But now we're seeing Ford still with this commitment of becoming the premier brand they once was. So I like hearing this come out of the Ford camp, and I love to see what their plans are and what they do decide when it's all said and done with the 2019 Ford car is going to be.
And to express your point, CJ Sports, the pendulum swung last year because Stuart Haas took their talents to Ford, and Chevrolet actually was behind Ford in victories for the whole year, which is the first time in a very, very long time. And that was the addition, the single-handed addition of the new Ford team. We've seen Ford in the last few years go after younger talent, of course, bringing Joey Logano on. It's hard to believe that Joey Logano has been with Penske now longer than when he was with the Gibbs Cup team. So time flies, but Ford's made an investment into the talents, and now definitely they're going to be able to take advantage with the new concept car that they come out with. And I do want to reiterate one more time that, you know, these are pony cars. They're not muscle cars of our time. They just don't make cars like that anymore. And it is kind of more of a pony car than it is a muscle car. But, Mike, Stats, I know you've got something to this point you'd like to chime in.
No, it's just I like to see the Mustang, too. My father had two Mustangs, and he loved those cars. And I kind of like the looks of them myself. And I like to see the Mustang in the Cup Series.
Yeah, definitely. So I see it probably as the Mustang coming up as well, and really excited, like I said, about the changes that are coming. And the Hawkeye system, of course, is going to help keep everybody on a level playing field, as Brett Keselowski said at the beginning of Speed Weeks. Craig Moore, do you have a topic?
Yeah, I was watching the show earlier today, and McMurray had issues. I don't know if you guys seen that, but he had issues with the optical scan. His right front was out. They had a Bondo and put wrap on it. And his right rear, his window was too far in, and his deck lid was off. So they had to readjust that, and I think that optical scan, that new Hawkeye system, I think it's gonna make, I don't want to say cheating impossible, because once it leaves tech, who knows what they'll do. But it's going to make it a little tougher to skirt the rules, so to speak. I mean, that's what do you guys think?
Well, I think that, you know, if you want to go with the topic on the cars being all yawed out, that's definitely an interesting topic. But I think if we watch the race, we kind of got a good understanding of why the cars are yawed out as far as they are. What they're trying to do is get the air to the rear spoiler, which will give them more downforce. So they've got a track bar that they've used to basically move the structure of the car. That way it holds a little bit different when it goes into the corner. It looks like it's sawed out just a little bit. It was interesting that they said from where go, I don't know if this is going to work come race time. And the spin that I've seen from Larson and the spin that I've seen for the situation I've seen with McMurray, I'm kind of questioning if some of these cars are not yawed out just a little bit too much. If that can help you on your question, Craig.
No, it absolutely does. I mean, Larson had great skill saving that car, because there's no way that car should have not done more damage. I mean, he hardly did any damage to it whatsoever. Now, I watched that over and over again to see if I could find fault with anybody. And there wasn't any fault. Bush got a really nice run. Actually, too much of a run. And just took the side draft off of him and sent him for a ride.
Well, with Jimmy Johnson's wreck even, you know, Larson, the hit wasn't that hard. It could be just the way that the air was taken off the car and actually sucked it to the side. You know, that's something that these engineers are really going to have to look at coming up for the Daytona 500. I'm sure we're going to have a lot more information, though, after the Can-Am Dual 150s. CJ Sports, what's your talk back on the yawed out situation with the cars? Lack of better English.
I mean, I'm listening to Craig talk about, you know, it, making it harder for them to cheat, or I'm not going to say cheat, but push that gray area. The only thing I can sit there and think to myself is it's kind of like a hiccup, just like any other rule change. You know, you can't burn out. You can't do this. You can't do that. And yes, they're trying to make sure that every team is playing underneath the same rules, but it's entertaining, because then these teams find something else that they can go push the gray area. That's no longer a concern. So, I understand we're having teams that they're having to make these corrections, and you know, NASCAR is really trying to make it so it's everybody's within that rule, but I think just like everything
else. That's the thing, though, with this. This is the track bar, CJ Sports, and I don't think that we've really seen up until now what advantage the driver has by being able to adjust that track bar. And I want to reiterate one more time that the track bar is actually a bar up underneath the back end of the car, and it's connected to the actual frame. So any time that there's movement within that track bar, what it will do is it will move the center point of that tire to a different place in the rear. So, you know, perfectly lined up down straight like you would expect your car to be. As soon as you start adjusting on that track bar, you're moving your car either to the right or to the left, because basically you're moving the balance of the car. So this is well within the rules. It's well within the guidelines of racing. The real question is, can these drivers with this much downforce and this much air, are they going to be able to hold steady the cars with that much being already given into the steering wheel or into the physics of the car? I didn't mean to step on you there, CJ.
Are you good?
If you're ready to pass it to Mike, that's cool too, CJ. But I think you do have another point to this, right?
Well, I mean, we're getting to the generation of some of the best drivers that, you know, we went so long without. I think it's going to take a race or two, but I think this will be a subject of the old. I think these drivers will be able to adjust and, you know, use this, of course, to their advantage and, you know, make them, you know, their cars even better out there. I just think it's something that they're just going to have to adjust to. And with the talent, skill set that's out there, I don't think it's going to be any time at all.
Yeah, it's not going to take them long to get it figured out. And I'm sure that there's engineers already looking to see if they had too much track bar in some of these cars that could actually disrupt the draft. And I believe that that's exactly what happened when Larson tapped Jimmy Johnson. Of course, we're used to seeing this kind of contact at super speedways, guys.
Called
the bump draft.
Well, also, they brought up the fact that the Camaro front is not as flat. And so I'm curious how much that played into effect that, you know, they're just not used to bump drafting with these new front ends because they switched, you know, to the Camaro. How flat, or, you know, maybe how much of of it not being a flat surface situation had anything to do with that. And, you know, I know when we were talking about Ford earlier, I was sitting there thinking, I wonder if this is something that Ford will pay attention to if they're going to be watching the Camaro and the front being different, how much that plays into their decision. You know, they don't want their drivers to be behind part of the season as they have to adjust with, you know, the bump drafting of these super speedways because they're not used to these new front ends.
Yeah, Mike, do you have something you want to put on Craig's question?
I just think that no matter what they do technically, you're still going to, I mean, it's been, you know, since NASCAR started, you had the drivers and the teams try to push the envelope. So I don't think that, you know, whatever they do that's different, there'll always be somebody or some team that tries to push the envelope no matter what they do that's different.
Yeah, I mean, we see Joey Logano sticking his hand out the window to possibly disrupt the air from hitting in holding the spoiler on the driver's side of the car. These guys will go to whatever extreme it takes to maybe find an advantage, so to speak. But, you know, and go back to CJ's point, it's very interesting that these noses may be rounded off, you know, like they said. The noses may be rounded off a lot more than what they've experienced in the past. I know that back in the 90s, the Luminous had a pretty rounded front end without much give. So if they're not as flat as what they were, then actually pushing a car would cause that kind of reaction, I guess, to the car in front. But it is a lot of questions in the new package and all this. It's really it's going to lead for an interesting dual 150s. I guess CJ Sports, do you have a topic?
I didn't want to say I told everybody so, but the 88 car out front, I want to get your guys' thoughts. Alex Bowman. Oh, you know, and you know, I don't know if I was the front banner, but I was one of them up in that lead pack saying Alex Bowman the whole time, and, you know, he's proven himself to me, and he flat put down on the lap today, and I've never cheered for an 88 before, but there's a good chance that finally there's a real driver in the 88 for as long as back I can remember, and, you know, I might actually have something that says 88 National Guard on it for once in my life.
No, Craig, I'll let you respond to that. Y'all know where I want to go, but go ahead, Craig.
real quick.
If I could get the boo up quick enough, hold on. Boo.
Boo.
Okay, go ahead.
That sounds like a sheep. Bad.
All right, go ahead, Craig. Yeah.
No, I was actually going to bring up Bowman, too, and I think it's great that he was able to do that. My question is this, not necessarily that there's folly as you know, Mr. CJ Sports says a real driver in the 88. But remember, CJ, this dude's only got a one-year contract. He's got to come out firing on all 12 cylinders in an 8-cylinder vehicle. So,
he'll get another contract. He'll get another contract.
What's that?
He'll get another contract.
Well, you know, I don't know. I think it's great. I think it's great for the 88 team and Hendrick in general. 195 miles an hour, that's 194. That's pretty amazing. But will he have what it takes come Sunday?
I think the experience he got and the opportunity he got last year, I don't know. I don't think he's gonna come out overwhelm us, and we're gonna be talking about him like Kyle Larson. But I think the consistency, how well he manages to protect his car, I just think he's a very smart driver, not a flashy driver, not a driver that's going to win 15 races this year. But I think he's a very smart driver.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, looking at it, you can't pin a season on a race. But if he's able to consistently put top five, top tens together, even top 15s, Mr. Hendrick can't overlook that. By the way, we're live on the Race Chat Live Facebook.
But does this diminish Dale Jr. in some way and sort? Because, you know, obviously he's outside of the car. It's no more this secret, you know, Dale Earnhardt information being passed along, because obviously Jeffrey doesn't get any of that information. but, you know, does it kind of diminish the fact that, you know, Dale Jr., I guess it really puts more emphasis on what this team is capable of. Jr. may have walked away from the team at the wrong time. I think that Alex Bowman can be successful. I also think that we're reading way too much into it, because this car, I'd like to say, was set up by Dale, but the team in itself is used to what Dale wants out of the car, and who's to say it doesn't drive like a Cadillac? Mike Perricone, what you got to say on that?
I'm one of the ones that heard CJ say it all along, because he was saying it from the jump on the 110 Nation show, sports show. So he's been one of the first ones that said Bowman, you know,
CJ's been very vocal on all the shows that he thought that Bowman had the talent to get where he is. And I will stand with CJ Sports as well right now and defend the fact that he may be on a one-year deal, but it would take a catastrophe for him to not get a second- and third-year deal. So, or Kyle Larson may take the ship reins, as I've always predicted.
It's
but in reality, Jimmy Johnson is probably just a couple of years away, so we're not going to get into that boat. But Jimmy Johnson's probably a couple of years away from retiring, and Larson may be then primed to be able to come over to Hendrick Motorsports. But go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
I was surprised also, two things. First of all, because he's a local guy, Denny Hamlin's crew chief, and Denny will be on the front row, is a local guy from Riverhead that used to crew chief there. So that's a personal thing with me. But also, I was wondering if you guys heard the same thing during the clash at the end when Jimmy Johnson spun or was spun or whatever happened there. I was surprised that it was the seventh year in a row that he spun out of that race. 7 years in a row he spun in the last lap. Well, it's spun out of the race. So that kind of surprised me.
Yeah, at Daytona, there's really no streak at all that surprises me, because when you look at the Daytona race, you know, from Daytona 500, the twin 150s used to be the 125s, There's really a lot of races at Daytona, so any streak doesn't surprise me. But being that it's our 7-time champion, it does seem kind of odd, right? Or is he 8-time? He's not 8-time yet, right?
No, he's not 8-time. He probably won't make 8-time.
Yeah, 7-time is 7-time spinner. Craig, what's your thoughts on Jimmy Johnson's 7-time spinning, 7-time wrecking the Clash? Do you think that's a streak that's legit?
It could be. It honestly could be, but does it really matter? Look at all the things a man has accomplished in his racing career. He is tied with two of the greatest of all time for championship. He's a threat almost every year to win another one. That streak really don't matter. It's what he does Daytona to Homestead or Daytona to Richmond that really matters.
Yeah, because the most unusual stat of all is the fact that Tony Stewart won at Daytona 19 times in his career and never won the Daytona 500. So compared to other streaks, it is kind of odd that Jimmy Johnson, 7-time champion, has wrecked 7 times in a row in the Clash. But once again, we're talking about Daytona here. It carries this odd cloud over the head where anything can happen. Your thoughts on that, CJ Sports?
Daytona and Talladega are such a, oh my God. Don't get me wrong, I love Daytona and Talladega. I'm one of those people, people get so aggravated with the pack racing and the big ones and everything else. If every weekend could be a super speedway race, I would live in, I don't know if I could handle myself. I just love it. I don't know. Anytime I play a video game, it is a super speedway track. I get aggravated with all the rest of the tracks. I don't know. I just love super speedway. But there's so many what-ifs to these two tracks that, yes, when I heard that, I was kind of like, wow, like, this man's wrecked out of 7 Clash races in a row. But his Daytona, I mean, it could be the 500 years. When you start talking about 20 years, like it took Senior to win, then maybe but it's a Busch Clash race. It's only 7 consecutive.
17 for DW.
So, I mean, when we get a double digits, then let's look more into, you know, this conversation. But it's Talladega and Daytona. It's a super speedway. It's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if someone actually sat down and went through the statistics of every race dating back to the first Daytona and the first Talladega race, that there was probably other streaks like this that we just never kept track of. It wasn't that big of a deal. It's just something that, you know, this generation, we break down the things that this racer's never perform better than any other racer when it's 70 degrees and 3 clouds in the sky and everything else. ESPN will break everything down. And that's just the generation we're in. But I don't think it would be such a wild thing if we actually sat down and someone actually statistically went through all that and we actually heard how many streaks are like this or even worse.
That's for somebody who has a lot of time on their hands.
Mr. Paratone. I have a question I wanted to throw out there. It just hit me when we were talking about Hendrick, and then, of course, earlier we were talking about the Clash and Penske. When we have a week like this where we watch Hendrick Motorsports do so good in qualifying, as William Byron was up there, Jimmy Johnson was up there, and, of course, Alex Bowman on the pole, very fast cars. And you got Team Hendrick and Team Chevy fans out there wanting to get excited. But then we turn around in the same day and watch the Busch Clash, where they're actually in more of a racing situation, and you watch Penske dominate, and you watch Team Ford dominate. What do you take away from day one? Are we looking at anybody that's really a powerhouse? Do you take what we saw from the qualifying and what the single cars, how strong they are, or do we take what we've watched today and watch Penske get up front and have all three cars, you know, kind of lead the way from, you know, a lot of the clash? What do you guys take away from what we've seen with really two different outcomes on who looks strongest?
I can lead this off and just say Daytona's Daytona. Things are going to happen here that doesn't happen anywhere else. It's going to be hard to say whether or not one has a better topic line than the other. What's a better headline? What I really see is balance in all this. And so there's not really one major story that's sticking out above the rest, other than the conspiracy that, you know, Alex Bowman is the pole sitter. So I'll pass it along to Craig.
I think time is going to tell, like I said, and I didn't mean to step over you, Chris. I think time's going to tell what's going to happen with these cars. You just said it. You said it best. Daytona is Daytona. We'll see come Sunday what happens. I think a lot of things we're going to see Thursday in the Can-Am 150 is going to be your – we'll see who's going to dominate there, too. We may get a Brad Keselowski in a Ford or even Martin Truex in a Toyota. Daytona is its own animal. There's not much. It's like Talladega. If you were to swap these weekends out, it's the same animal, different track. Everybody's trying to prove their dominance week one or week.
I think I would be most concerned, Craig, about Toyotas, though, leading up to this, because Toyota doesn't have as many cars that are competable in the field, right? We've seen what Penske was able to do by putting the top three up there. Now, that was without Stuart Haas. Stuart Haas was, sixth, seventh, and ninth or something like that. So, you're running with your manufacturer kind of in the beginning of these races. Is there a competitive balance to all this, Craig, or continue with what you were saying?
I think there's going to be. I think that Toyota will prove that, hey, we were lacking a little bit in qualifying and in the clash, but watch out for them come Thursday when it all matters. Yeah, there's bragging rights for the clash, but It doesn't really fit into the grand scheme of things come late in the season, except for bonus points. And, you know, obviously we see how that turned out today, and we'll see how things turn out on Thursday for the Twin 150s. I don't know why, but I'm old school and want to keep saying Twin 125, but the Can-Am 150.
Hamlin is there. And Hamlin had a very fast car. He was a lot faster than the others when he came out on the track for his qualifying run. And then we were able to see Hamlin work very well in the draft at the beginning parts of the clash. So, I mean, what we've seen is I'll keep going back to it. It's a competitive balance. It seems like everything's hitting on the right accord. Perricone, what do you have for this?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, you can't really judge what goes on with the clash as far as the whole season, because what do you have? A field of what? Seven cars, I think? Something like seven cars. So it's not a full representation of who's out there. I mean, you know, I just think it's like you say, this particular race was more or less for bragging rights.
Very, very good point there, Stats. Very good point. So we've covered the hype of Bowman. We've the track bar situation where the cars are looking a little bit unbalanced out there. I guess we can move on into who is the Daytona 500 favorite as of today. Brad Keselowski comes all the way from the rear, y'all, and he wins the clash. Is that improving Ford's performance? I mean, Ford's won two out of the last four races here at the restrictor plate races. Keselowski comes out and just puts an ass whooping, and I'll say it again, ass whooping on everybody going from worst to first. Horse's mouth or not, but that guy is, he told everybody he was going to win it, and he did. And that, to me, that takes a couple of tight fitting lug nuts there, guys. So, what's your take on that, CJ Sports?
I don't want to sound repetitive to what Mike just said, but that kind of goes to the same point. It's not a full field. So as impressive as it is that he did pass, I think that him last at first and how much I heard it on the coverage kind of, to me, got overplayed because it's not a full field. You start 40th and go to first. I'm impressed. You go from, what, 20-something or whatever team, how many cars were out there today. Not quite as big deal because we've seen in this pack racing, you know, a car come from the back of the pack, you know, 15, 20, and come up front very easily in pack racing. So, you know, that kind of plays off that. But, yes, I agree to say that you're going to go out and win. You know, you either it works and you look like you know what you're talking about and you're one cocky son of a gun, or you out there just run your mouth and you can't back what you say. And, you know, fortunately for Brad, you know, it worked out, and you know, a lot of it had to do with the team. I think they would have been so kind or waited so long if they would have been Penske 2-3 right behind them. So I think that played into, you know, a factor. Yes, of course, Blaney and Logano want to win, but they're not going to push it as far. They're not going to essentially either ruin a 1-2-3 finish or tear up, especially it being a Busch Clash race.
Vegas has Keselowski favored, CJ Sports. Vegas has Keselowski favored. Keselowski said that he was going to come out and win the Clash. Is Keselowski the running favorite for the Daytona 500?
I think, and to off of what Craig said as well, I think after Thursday, I think we'll get more of a definitive answer. I think as of right now, yes. He's your favorite. He showed us that, you know, his car out there in race trim in the pack is a very strong car, and he's very confident in what he has underneath him. So, yes, me right now, and speaking right this moment, yes, he is favorite. I think Thursday gives us a better idea of who really has something and where we can start looking at who's favorite. I don't think we – I think our winner's going to be a long shot. I think one of these young guys, we're going to be sitting here next Sunday night talking about somebody that we're not talking about right now.
Mike Perricone, do you think what's your chime in on this, Mike? And then we'll let Craig come up with the next topic.
I'd like to see, again, personally, I'd like to see Hamlin win it. But is
Keselowski the favorite here?
Not necessarily. Again, I'm not putting him down, but you have to understand, even though he came from worst to first, like CJ said, they said it about 40 zillion times, he came from like eighth to first. And you've seen that happen just with a bunch of wrecks at Daytona. You know, the eighth place car could be the second place car before you know it. Okay, so in that respect, yes, it was impressive that he, like, you know, he did come from last to first, but like CJ said, do it with 40 cars and you'll really be impressed. So I don't think what he did today necessarily makes him the favorite. I think there are teams that know what it takes to win at Daytona that's done it in the past. Harvick, Hamlin, I think won it once. You mentioned even Tony Stewart. Okay, he didn't win the 500, but he won. The reason he had such a good record at Daytona was, I can remember every summer it seemed like there when he was in the 20 car, he was climbing the fence on the 4th of July because he won the July event at Daytona for so long. So I don't think it necessarily what Brad did today makes him the overall favorite. No.
And I want to go back to the point with Tony Stewart. He also, I believe, won three Busch Series, Xfinity Series races in February in a row. Stats, you can follow up and find that information there for me if you don't mind. I do believe Tony won two or three in a row, and I think it was somewhere around 06 to 09 or something like that. If I'm not mistaken, it was a 33 Old Spice car. So if we can get that looked up real quick. Okay, Craig,
I want
to you're dying to have the next topic. Go ahead.
I want to just chime in on what they said real quick. They're absolutely right. It was a 17-car field. There were supposed to be 20. That's still not a full-car field. You were missing Danica, a.k.a. Crash, Dale Jr., and Kendra. What?
Nobody say a word to him. Just act like he didn't even speak, okay? I don't know why we had to do that, but...
I just don't understand. We were missing three cars. It's not a 40-car field.
We're missing three cars that might be competitive at the Daytona 500. No, actually, here's the difference. It's 20 rows versus what? 8 rows, 9 rows, 10 rows. Okay, 10 rows
right.
is 20 cars. So we're talking about 20 rows back. Being the 21st row, as a matter of fact, I guess if you were the last car on the tail end, if it's 40 cars, you'd be on the outside. Okay, anyway, so that's 18 rows that you have to go through to get to that point again, and so that's just to be up where you started in the first place. So it is kind of a toss of words there, from worst to first, but. I'm guessing from what everybody's saying, it's really not going to make a difference, and it's still an open crapshoot for anybody for the Daytona 500. As a matter of fact, Danica Patrick has a better chance at winning than Martin Truex Jr. by Vegas odds. How odd is that?
That's very odd.
How's that even possible?
Well, because there's a 15-1 odd that anybody could win this race. It's the seventh bet that you can take. There's only six drivers above the 15-1 that actually have a legitimate chance. So anybody else in the field is a 15-1.
All right, let me ask you this. We touched on this on Thursday night, and I believe Stats chimed in on this as well. I don't quite remember. But we were talking about it Thursday about 40 cars in the field, 40 cars down there to qualify. All 40 are going to make it. And they alluded to that too today, and I was listening to DW, who sometimes the man is brilliant and sometimes, well, he's a box of rocks. And he sounded disappointed about that as well. Out of the Clash drivers, out of everybody that's down there, who is walking out, or Can-Am, the 150s, who has the best shot, since we're going to do wide open discussion here, who has the best shot to start 3 and 4? Correct.
I guess Keselowski would be the favorite in one field. Unfortunately, with this one, we would need which starting lineups. In other words, who's on the even side and who's on the odd side. Of course, all the even cars are going to be in one race, and all the odd cars are going to be in the other race based off of their finish. So first will be first, third, fifth, seventh on down will
Chris,
be the one.
On the dual lineup one, I'm going to give you the big names out of the first one. You got Alex Bowman, Jimmy Johnson, William Byron, Suarez, Stenhouse, Logano, Blaney, Kurt Busch, Keselowski, Austin Dillon. Those are your big names in the first one. Your second lineup, Hamlin, Kyle Busch, Eric Jones, Harvick, Chase Elliott. I'm sorry, the first Dillon was, did I say Dillon? Yeah, Ty Dillon was in the first one, I'm sorry. Austin Dillon's in the second one. Kyle Larson, Martin Truex, former winner Trevor Bayne. Those are the names in the second one.
Yeah.
If that helps any.
I would have to say it's Keselowski in the first one and Hamlin in the second one.
See, I'm putting my money on, I'm putting my money on the first one on Byron.
Yeah, that's a good that's wide open there.
With Denny Hamlin's also in the front row, right?
Yeah,
he's
okay. So Hamlin's probably not even going to try to win this second dual lineup. I think he's going to contend at first, but I don't. Well, I guess they changed the point system differently now anyway, so I guess you do want to compete for it. I was just trying to remember. I was trying to – the front row is already locked. I wasn't going to take Denny Hamlin out of the second one. That's what I was trying to confirm. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Okay. So if I were to take Hamlin off of there, I would probably put my money back on Truex Jr. coming back through the field there because, you know – Truex is going to be just as equal as anybody, and he's riding a whole heat of confidence. So, I would go with Truex being on the win list there.
Okay. In the second one, I'm going to have Bush.
I'm writing these down, guys. Hold on. I'm writing them down real quick. So, I've got Keselowski and Truex on the opposite side. Now that's CJ Sports. Who do you have?
I'm going to say Keselowski and I'm going to go with Harvick.
Craig Moore.
I'm going with the two Bs, William Byron and Kyle Busch.
Busch. All right, Mike. If you need CJ to read them off to you one more time.
I think I have Tony Stewart. I looked him up on Wikipedia, and in his Xfinity career, which I assume is the 33 car because that's the only one I can remember him driving. He had 41 top tens. Eleven wins and six poles, and his first win was at Daytona in 2005, and his last race was at Daytona in an Xfinity car in 2013.
How many wins at Daytona did he have, Seth? In the Xfinity?
Six overall, and I believe three at Daytona.
Wow. So, there you go. That was a master at his own trick, but could not get the Daytona 500. Okay, Stats, so we've got row number one, which would be, of course, Alex Bowman leading him to the field. You got row number two, which is Hamlin. Who are your, besides those two, who are your favorites to win in row one and then in row two? Or the first 150 and then the second 150.
I look for Harvick to do something this year. I think he had an off year last year, except for that race at the end, which was Texas, I believe, where nobody expected him. Either Texas or I'm thinking it was Texas. I wanted to say it's Phoenix,
yeah.
But it was Texas.
This is for the 150s though, in the dual races. CJ, go ahead and read him off the race, the first race, and then give him some names for the second one.
Okay.
First one, you got Alex Bowman, Jimmy Johnson, William Byron, Suarez, Stenhouse, Logano, Ryan Blaney, Kurt Busch, Keselowski, Ryan Newman, McMurray. Those are really your big names.
Okay, well, I'm not going to pick McMurray because he tends to wreck all the time. Well, you know, some things never change. When I saw him wreck today, I said, okay. But it wouldn't surprise me out of that group you just named. They mentioned it pretty much all day, too. Ryan Newman wouldn't be a surprise to me. I guess that would be the one that would stick out in terms of the names.
Ryan Newman. Interesting, CJ Sport. Stats. Interesting.
As far as
okay,
Daytona.
The second
lineup, you got Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, Eric Jones, Harvick, Chase Elliott, Austin Dillon, Kyle Larson, Trevor Bayne, Martin Truex, Danica Patrick. Those are the big names out of the second roster, the second grid.
You got to go with Martin. So, you know, only because he consistency last year, and hopefully they can carry over. I don't look at Danica. I mean, I'm sure she'll be the sentimental favorite. I mean, everybody will want her to do well.
Yeah, everybody wants her.
Yeah.
Only some can afford her.
You guys have your mind in the gutter, I can tell, but anyway. in terms of a sentimental favorite, wouldn't it be a surprise if she did end up, you know, winning the race? But I really look for Harvick overall to do well this year, and it wouldn't surprise me if it didn't start at Daytona, because he's done it before, and they have, you know, they have experience with winning.
So we know that the next topic for Mike's going to be, does Danica have a chance? And I have a feeling we're all going to answer this one. But before we go to that one, guys, calm down. Everybody, you know, we got a boat to steer here. And so what I'm surprised the most at is nobody picked Logano. Logano seems to be the dark horse. Is this in favor of? Can we see Logano as a dark horse here?
I think anybody can be seen as a dark horse, even DJ Kennington. I mean, the guy drives a dump truck and a salt truck during the week, and then he goes racing on the weekends. I mean, that would be, I mean, I know it's almost impossible, but that would almost be a fairy tale ending to a career.
So you're saying there's a chance?
No chance.
That's what
If you better say that, then pick Carl Long, for God's sake, you know.
Wait a minute. Carl Long is not in this race, but Mark Thompson is, and there's also Gary Gauding, who we've not even seen on the track yet. There, the bank, I can imagine some mafia guys sitting around the car saying, no, you can't drive, because all they're going to do is go out and make one lap in that thing if they can even convince NASCAR to let them start the race. And that money is going straight to pay off some debt. I can see guys in black suits around that car not letting anybody around it until it's time to actually go. So Mark Thompson has a ride. Some of the dark horses here, Mark Thompson, Gary Gauding.
Justin Marks.
There's also who?
Justin Marks.
Justin Marks, yeah. Danica Patrick. Name a couple of more. They do have a chance here at this type of race. Jeffrey Earnhardt. It's a long race, and we could see some people losing the draft So there's always a chance of going a lap down. But what always puts people back in favor at Daytona is these late race cautions, the waiver round. Those guys get their laps back. Next thing you know, they went from three laps down riding around through the whole race. As you sit there, you watch vroom, 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 vroom. And then you sit there and you eat some popcorn and you drink a little bit of Coke, and then all of a sudden you got vroom, vroom. And those are the guys who somehow in the end get top 10 finishes. It's well-mastered plan that these guys are able to show their power. But in reality, there is, you know, like I said, Vegas, as I've passed around in the group message, has given any other driver a 15-1 chance to win.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
Do you know how badly I would flip my lid? Because you're talking about a long horse and anybody has a chance. That was the first year, and how far I can remember back, that there is not a legitimate Earnhardt that's going to I'm not saying Jeffrey's not a legitimate Earnhardt, but a legitimate Earnhardt that has a chance.
Yeah, we better be careful.
A legitimate chance of winning the race. And if he somehow is able to put Earnhardt back into victory lane after all these years, and I finally get a break of the Earnhardt conversation, he finds a way to win this race. So be it. I am going to flip.
That would be the topic of the year.
I would be like those sports fans that you see in their home with the whole video, and then they smash the TV or throw the TV on the ground. Of course, I'm not going to ruin my TV, but I would probably have one of those type of videos.
Okay, great visuals there, guys. Jeffrey Earnhardt has a chance in hell to win, and so does Danica Patrick, guys. So, I mean, to not take your topic away from you, Mike, stats, but, you know, it's a possibility. I think that's the luring factor of this being the championship race. This is a race in itself. I remember the topic that we left Thursday. You know, this is a championship race, guys. This is more than just a win. Somebody's going to walk away the Daytona 500 champion, and in this type of racing, it could be anybody.
Chris, we're still in the conversation, anybody can win this race. Do we talk differently about Danica Patrick Monday, February 19th, with Daytona pretty much being her last, pretty much possibly her last race ever? Would we be speaking of her on a different level or talking about her differently if somehow her final run at Daytona she manages to win? Or is the damage already done when we label what we label Danica as after she retired?
No, because we're talking about revenge here, and Ricky Stenhouse will dump her as soon as she tries to pass him. So I just don't see her winning.
If she does, is the conversation different if she somehow manages to do it?
Of course. Of course it would be different, and we'd be lying if we said
they ride the entire year.
Go ahead, Greg.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you, but I'm old. If she somehow manages, not even so much to win, but if she so much as manages to have a top 10 finish, guarantee you that she will have a ride for more than just Daytona.
If she wins Daytona, who flips the bill for the year? What team makes that sacrifice to add another car knowing that they're locked into the chase?
We've seen this with Trevor Bayne. It doesn't happen. Those are the times of the past. Nobody writes a check after Daytona. The check's written beforehand.
I disagree.
Did they have the chase back with Trevor Bayne? Was we already in that platform yet? I don't think that it was the same. You win, you're in concept.
It wasn't the playoff, but it was still a chase.
Yeah, but it wasn't when you're in. It wasn't. The wins weren't as important when they first did the chase. Am I correct?
Trevor Bayne actually won on the very first year that they made you claim whether or not you were going to be a rookie, and Trevor Bayne had not claimed as a rookie. He had claimed he was running for Nation at the time, of course, Nationwide, but Xfinity Series championship points. So Trevor Bayne was not even classified as a rookie, so it would not have made him eligible to win the championship.
Danica's situation is differently. So with that being said, does the team step up? We talked about this last year with Elliott Sadler. If he would have put Baldwin Racing back into victory lane at Daytona last year, and whether or not either Baldwin would have done the full year or somebody else, does somebody, if she happens to win, in all seriousness, if she happens to win, do you think that there's a team that steps up and provides an opportunity knowing that they're locked into the playoffs?
I think so.
Me, no.
I think they would be foolish not to. It gets them one step further than they were before she got behind the steering wheel.
And, of course, you talk about not going from only having one race pretty much scheduled all year to a full season. And, of course, now that team is center of attention of NASCAR world once again because of Danica, regardless what team it is. But I'm curious. Like I said, it's not just Danica because we talked about it last year with Elliott Sadler when they did one or two races, whether or not that changes anything. And, it's just curious if y'all, thought, would there be a team? And I don't know. I'm curious to know if there would be a team. You got Jack Roush that's only got two cars out there. Would he be able to, willing to flip, because he's got the room. Some of these teams are maxed out, already got their four rides, and there's nothing they can do. But it is interesting to, sit there and think, if somehow this miracle happens, that she puts that car in victory lane, does somebody throw something together real quick? Is it feasibly possible? Would she do it? It kind of makes you wonder, what if?
Well, I don't have any instant information because I haven't talked to him. But, CJ, like you said, we talked about this last year with Tommy. Now, Tommy Baldwin, generally, I don't know what he's doing this year, does the Daytona 500 with Elliott Sadler because that's his favorite driver for whatever reason. But does he put Danica in a car? Not the Daytona, but after Daytona, if she wins, that would be something to ask. And also, obviously, he'd have to remove Elliott Sadler from the car, even if he ran the second Daytona race in the summertime. So that would be interesting to see.
I think my take on it is, if you'll read what she said in her comments about not running the Clash, in order to turn the steering wheel or engineer the car, it takes money. And to me, Danica is not, even if she won, I don't think that Danica would want to show up next week and race. I think that, to my point, the deal would have to be pretty much well worth it, because to me, Danica's ready to walk away. She said that she's not even going to be a casual fan, that she'll probably not have any interest in even watching on Sunday. So I'm thinking, we're thinking that Danica still wants to hold on to this dream, but I think that it would be a humongous dream come true if she did win and was actually able to walk away, because we've hammered that girl a lot throughout her career in NASCAR, and I wonder if just some of that's finally rubbed on her and made her less passionate about the sport.
I blame you all. I'm a Danica fan.
No, that's not nice.
Don't blame me. I mean, I take up for her. I think that she's been great for the sport. I think that it's been an opportunity for the brand of NASCAR to be looked at. First of all, what people don't understand about Danica is there are people in Brazil who know who Danica Patrick is, and that is something that you don't get very much in NASCAR. Danica is a open wheel driver. She's raced in European racing leagues. So she's well known throughout the world, and that was a special brand that NASCAR was able to hold with her. But I think that her driving career is over with, as she said, and she's looking forward to May. So even if she won, it would be the greatest thing that's ever happen for Danica Patrick, but after that, it would be racing as usual for the other 39 guys that are going to do this full time.
All right, so here's my question going into that. She wins the, let's say, by some amazing chance, and 39 other cars wrecked, she wins. Sorry. There will be an empty spot if she were to win, if she doesn't run, because according to NASCAR rules, you've got to run X amount of races to still qualify, going back to the Kyle Busch thing. They'd have an open spot, and I know this is all speculative. Then what do? It creates a whole other problem for NASCAR.
No dead air time, guys. Come on. That's horrible. Well, That's the worst thing in radio. Everybody was just left like, This is a PSA, a public service announcement. We are sorry for the 110 Nation Blogspot Network, Radio Network, and Facebook page is delayed in this certain broadcast. But fans, if you'll hang on for just a moment, we'll be back. Thank you. All right, y'all ready?
I was just sitting there thinking that they, you know, this would just be one year that they actually have someone who won a race that didn't qualify for the chase. I never really would even have thought of it that way. But like you said, Mike, we're talking about her, Chris, about what she's accomplished and the brand and everything else. I think the biggest thing that I have taken away from the whole Danica career, and I thank her for, I understand she did not pave this path. I do realize that she took a very well paid, a very well dirt road path that was very clear and helped pave it for the future. We would have never gotten the opportunity in our generation, I don't think in my generation anyway, of seeing what I got to see Saturday with Natalie Decker sitting on the front row for the ARCA Series race and being the highest finishing female and finishing fifth in ARCA history if it wouldn't have been for Danica Patrick. There's been other female drivers before her that has helped make this all possible, but seeing the long-term career, you know, that Danica's had and the impact she's had on the sport and the brand that she has made, and seeing someone like Natalie that has embraced it and social media-wise, how much Danica embraced it, especially with her brand and what she had going on, the yoga and everything else, whatever Danica put out on Twitter, everybody tweeted it, everybody favored it, and watching Natalie follow the same footsteps and watching her growers, you know, her following grow and what she does. I thank Danica for that. And you know, it's what happens if she, it all goes back to what happens if she wins this week.
Well, but you know, to your point, CJ Sports, I'm right there with you. Danica didn't necessarily pave the way, but she helped put a good solid concrete down, okay? And what Natalie Decker now has to look forward to is beating the records that Danica Patrick, or the standard that Danica Patrick set. Yeah. She's on her way to doing that. And I love the embrace that they had this weekend. I think that Danica was able to feed Natalie a lot of confidence rolling into ARCA. I've seen a couple of appearances there for them too, and it seemed to be a good bond, and obviously maybe a confidence booster as well for Natalie Decker.
No, she was definitely, and I'll give you that, she laid a solid ground for every female to come after her, both marketing and everything. Was she given a fair shake by the media? Absolutely not. I think that originally when she came in, she wasn't taken serious. That played on her confidence, despite what she had done at open wheel. But we all know that open wheel and fender cars are two different animals. And I wish her the best in whatever she does after this. And I agree with you, Chris. I think she just wants to walk away. And I think she was. I really think that she was disheartened. And I think we, the media, and I say we, helped with her decision to walk away and walk away with no regret. Because we dogged. She was easy fodder. I know for me, when I had the NASCAR roundup, I just thug dogged her every week. Not that she knew about it.
If she wins the race, she gets an opportunity to have the last lap. If somebody that she wins this race and she gets a full-year contract at a full-year ride and gets to go to the playoff, and who knows at that point anything could happen, that I agree. I said this last year. It already looked like with her new clothing line and her yoga stuff where she's doing all this fitness stuff and when she had all this brand stuff that she's doing once she passed post-race, I already thought that she checked out. I think that she was already focused on post-NASCAR. And she had lost a lot of interest and a lot of the passion. And you know, to her to say that she probably wouldn't even be a casual fan, I find it hard to spend that much time in a sport that you don't catch a race here and there. I think that, you know, it means more than what she wants to leave on the bleed. But I think that all changes if she happens to win this weekend. I think that, I'm not going to say the passion's there, but the interest is going to be there, the desire is going to be there, because now you have that chance to prove everybody that's talked all this garbage about you for the last so many years, you have one more chance to stick it to the man, literally. And I think that if she was to win a Daytona, I think we would see a totally different Danica. And I would not be shocked if we found a team that and a sponsor, because that's what the talk's going to be about all year long, is no longer retiring, that she won Daytona. That's money. That's TV time. That you can't get a better bang for your buck all season long. And I would not be shocked. I don't think it's going to happen, but I just would not be shocked if she won Daytona. All of a sudden, we're talking about her in week two, out there on the track.
You know, and CJ, I'll go to what you just said right there. It's a crapshoot. She could win, but it leads me to the next question. Of course, if she won, she would go on this media tour like crazy. And you know, thank goodness our sport and every network television embraces the Daytona 500 champion and puts them on their morning shows before they go to Disney World. It leads to my next question. Is she the MVFB, the most valuable future broadcaster? Could she bring in more money as a broadcaster than possibly what it took to seal Jeff Gordon or Dale Jr.? Is that a viable route for her to go to still stay within the sport?
No. There's not enough
you
people
answered that like
her.
I did. I love it.
There's
the attitude come right back. I love it. Give me some more of that, Mr. CJ Sports. Tell me why.
As much as I love Danica Patrick, there's not enough fans that like her. There's not enough people in the race for it. They because she was a GoDaddy girl, you know, sponsored by GoDaddy, that, you know, she kind of silver spoon. She got, because she's a girl, all this stuff, that she didn't earn it. She didn't belong in NASCAR. And there's not. Everybody has their reason for not liking her. I don't think there's enough people. Maybe if she's replacing Darrell Walter, because everybody's tired of hearing Darrell Walter every single week, maybe. But outside of that, I don't think that there is enough of an interest or enough of a fan base that likes Danica enough to hear her every week up in the studio. I just don't.
I would say that her Twitter and Instagram pages beg to differ there in public eye, but there again, we're talking about her fitness promotions as well. So.
I mean, there's
might be a few creeps on there. Any of you guys follow Danica?
There's a difference between following somebody social media wise, liking and sharing, and then having to listen to them for 4 hours and do something that they haven't been doing their whole life. You know, it was rough. It was rough listening to Jeff Gordon at first. Now it's fine. It's great, but and Gordon had a bigger fan base.
My counter argument is Jamie Little is well beyond past her prime, and I would much rather have Danica Patrick as a pit road reporter than Jamie Little. That's my opinion. Go ahead. Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Jamie Little's either. She says one too many times. I listened to her today, and y'all count my absolutelys, but and I actually said it a few times tonight.
That's four times.
Listening. All right, somebody was listening then. But no, I think she would be a welcome sight for a little while. I think she would absolutely bring a fresh perspective. Give something else for the ladies that are coming up in the sport to aspire to do once their racing career is over. And that's something that people don't often see. GW, he's pretty much worn out his welcome on Fox as far as I'm concerned. I didn't like Gordon at first. I think he's great. Mike Joy could probably retire. You know, I think that Danica up there might be a welcome fresh addition as long as she has the right people behind her to guide her. And I'm not saying in her ear, which we all know that they are, but at least to show her the ropes for a little while and make sure that everything goes according to plan.
Yeah, her and Denny Hamlin has practiced this already with the, I believe, the All-Star race or something. There was an event last year where Denica Patrick had a little stint up in the press box, and I think she did a really good job.
Why not when the Cup guys took over the Xfinity Series coverage, and that what that was?
Exactly,
yeah.
Mr. CJ Sports. Thanks for saving me there.
But to the whole DW thing, I think that they should have a expiration date. And what I mean is, having Gordon up there in the booth now, he still has a fresh perspective of all the changes and what it was like to be in that car a couple of years ago. DW is trying to take a guesstimated guess from driving 30 years ago what it's like to be in that car racing now. I just wish that Fox would be a little more aggressive of getting the currently retired. I would love to have Tony Stewart just because I love to hear him say whatever he wants to say and whatever's on top of his mind. But I would love for them to attack the freshly retired drivers and have them in the booth, because they're the ones that have gone through these rule changes. They're the ones that are experiencing these new downforce packages and everything else. Instead of having to listen to someone that has not been in a car for 30 years and really has no idea other than he's guessing or going by what else someone else has told him. That's what I wish Fox Sports would do when we talk about food.
I think we're so wrong for putting commentation down as something that can be done by a driver who just steps out of a race car. I think what we're missing here is the fact that Ned Jarrett was awesome commentator. He was a great race car driver too. Benny Parsons was an awesome commentator. But these guys were put under the reins of Ken Squire, of Chris Abernathy, Dick Bergeron. I mean, the legends of our time, y'all. Even Al Michaels talked about calling
Dr.
some 85 and 86 races. These guys were groomed like Belichick was under Parcells. I mean, you know, you look at the long list of people under Parcells that were great at what they did. You know, I mean, it's when you're able to get that kind of knowledge from people, it gives you kind of a step ahead. Go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. Go ahead, CJ.
I agree. I don't look at it. I guess I don't want when it kind of my radar kind of went off when Chris said this, that we have drivers that just come out of the car with no experience and, you know, are going in the booth. I look at it as the passion and the knowledge they have. I understand that they have not had the training, and I think that's why I was so, and I'm not a big Gordon fan. I was a Gordon fan when Busch Grand National days, when he first, you know, got in the Winston Cup, and once he won all the time, I just got tired of it. You know, what, 11, 13 races in a season going, who wants to watch somebody win that day all much every weekend? But I wasn't a big Gordon fan. I thought he should have retired well before he did. And to hear him first in the booth, it was rough because he hadn't had that training. But his knowledge and his passion to talk about it, you know, that's what, you know, we don't have the experience of half the stuff we talk about, but our passion, our experience, our knowledge, you know, makes it, you know, makes up for us, you know, not have the actual training. And so that's kind of how, you know, I look at Gordon. I kind of look past the lack of that experience because of what he brought knowledge-wise and freshness to that booth because of so many changes that happened since VW was on the track. So now, you know, you wouldn't even notice the difference, you know, that Gordon had never had any training.
But where's Alan Bestwick? Where's Marty Snyder at? Where are the real guys that can see, we feed off of each other, CJ Sports, and that's a great point that you brought there. We make each other better because, first of all, we don't want to get on here and act. We don't want to sound like we're fools. So we actually do a little. I just said that. I can't believe I did that. But we do our homework. So, you know, we try to present ourselves to know what we're doing. We try to coordinate in the right direction and keep people from stepping on top of each other. And so these drivers that get out and step into the booth, they're trained really quick, but you don't get the in-depth analysis like you would have gotten from a Ned Jarrett or a Chris Abernathy or a Ken Squire. They just don't have the right educated people that have done broadcasting long enough. Mike Joy, he does a great job, but that's one person in the booth that's actually been trained as a broadcaster. And I think it's not so much about – Jeff Gordon always wants to talk about a Chevrolet. For years, Darrell Watcher always wanted to talk about a Toyota. A broadcaster wants to talk about racing. Look at Dave Moody and what he's done on MRN Radio. They call him the Godfather for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, Chris,
one of my big concerns when Gordon first came on board with Fox was the fact that we knew that he was going to talk about Chevy all the time. My other big concern was the fact that it was going to be Hendrick this and Hendrick that, and it really wasn't. I mean, it was for a little bit, but then he broadened his horizons and he got better, and he wasn't necessarily Hendrick's bitch boy, so to speak, or pitch boy, so to speak. He talked about everything because, as CJ said and you had said, and Mike hasn't chimed in yet, but he's able to adapt because he's just got out of the car.
Yeah.
Whereas DW, 25 years ago, he was in a race car. He wasn't in a race car.
And bless his heart, he was just as bad on the first day as he is right now. DW has not improved at all over the years. And I think that the gray hairs have signaled the true fact that we're never going to have DW good in that booth. But boogity, 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 let's go racing, boys.
You know, the one thing that I will say that they're doing with Junior that they didn't have the opportunity, I don't believe, to do with Gordon, was they sent Junior – they sent Junior over to South Korea for the Olympics in Pyeongchang or whatever the heck it is, for him to learn from their broadcasters, from the NBC broadcasters over there. And I think that's a smart move on NBC's fault, on NBC's part. So that way he doesn't sound like a bumbling idiot like Darrell Waltrip does. And he at least has an idea, and he has a one-up on Gordon when Gordon came in. So I think that once he debuts at whatever race it is for
NBC,
that he's going to sound super intelligent. He's not going to sound like DW or Jeff Gordon when they
first
spoke.
No chance. No chance.
Look at the talent of broadcasters they have at NBC though. Mike Tirico, Mark Tirillo. I mean not Mark Mark Mike Tirillo, Dan Patrick. I mean the man of sports broadcasting, Dan Patrick, Rich Eisen. I mean these are guys, and Dale Jr. and Dan Patrick are really good friends. So Dale's being trained by the network that has cared about broadcasting, and they can give Kyle Petty, I get tired of listening to, Wally Dallenbach was a good, decent, I think he was a decent, you know, broadcaster, whatever. But over the years, they've improved their broadcasting. Richard Allen does a great job, but I would like to see an Allen Bestwick or something like that brought back. And Dale may be the guy, y'all. Dale may be the guy. Go ahead, Mike. I know you want to chime in.
If you look at, going back to the CJ said, yes, we're all passionate on the 110, but if you want to be technical, the only two people, and I'll put him before me, that's being actually trained in journalism degree is Shannon Bolin and myself. You know, and all the rest of us, including me, are doing it for our passion, yes, but the only two technically trained in it, in journalism and in communication, period, is Shannon Bolin and myself. So it doesn't necessarily be, now granted we're not going to be on national TV, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think my training's been pretty legit too, though. I don't know. I don't know if I can agree with that. I think that that's what journalism is, and that's why there's freelance journalism. A lot of people didn't pick the career to be a journalist, but they had enough. They had a good enough background to kind of blend in. I have heard from everybody that's superior of my talents that you are a failed athlete, or you have an interest in the reason why you want to be a broadcaster. And myself, I played baseball, I played football, I played basketball. I always had an interest in media at the same time. Mike, I don't know what drove you to journalism. That's probably a very good story, because basically journalism is open door for people of any way. Some of the best freelance journalists have. Look at Dick Bertrand. He was a doctor, guys. I mean, Dr. Jerry Punch. You know, these guys had other careers that they fell back to, and journalism was their true passion. So I believe journalism is driven by passion. Broadcasting and journalism, they seem to be closer now than what they used to be, but used to be there was a wide difference between a broadcaster and a journalist. A broadcaster was a commentator, and a journalist wrote the stories about what was broadcasted.
I can tell you that I've always followed sports, even though I'm, you know, in a wheelchair. I didn't play sports, you know, but I always followed sports, and I always could write well. You know, English was my best subject in terms of, you know, writing a story or writing anything, except poetry. That was my downfall. But anything else, I was fine. And
75-second show.
And people said to me, you should combine your love for sports and your ability to write. And that's how I got into journalism. And I always knew I wanted to do that when somebody said that to me. A friend of mine at the time said that to me. And just, you know, that's what got me started with it.
Yeah, and I promise you guys, at 6 and 7 years old, I was recording my voice on a tape deck, and also my mixtapes and all that other. Because you know, back then it was cool to be an MC or a DJ, and you know, not very many of us grew up to actually be one. But Craig Moore, look, we've got just like 30 seconds left before our Blog Talk Radio time runs out. Of course, we'll still be able to continue. I think it may shut us all off. I'm not sure what happens here.
Real quick, I just want to promote Thursday's show. Thursday we got the Big Ten on. Mike Hoosman's gonna join us for the entire hour, and we're gonna talk about the Big Ten coming up, and then Why Not Motorsports Park has their thing this weekend as well. And y'all can invite me for your 80 degree weather. That's all I got from 30 degree upstate New York.
Great, awesome. So I guess we bought some more time. So the airways didn't go off. Now this weekend is Mike Perillo, right? And then next weekend is actually Mid-South Big Ten.
Okay, then I was wrong. I was getting excited. Yes, this week is Mike Perillo, who is the Glen Ridge Motorsports Park promoter. He's one half of the Dynamic Duo that took it over from the last administration, who failed miserably. I won't go into who they are, but Mr. Perillo and his partner Ray Terrapin really turned around Glen Ridge Motorsports Park. They took it over in June of last year, and they have really done some dynamic things, and we're going to talk about that and what they got coming up this year. And they've actually got a car show coming up, their own car show. So that'll be exciting. But that's all I got from my end.
You got me a little nervous there, Craig.
That's all. I want to keep you on your toes.
So y'all got a couple of shows coming up this week as well. Mr. CJ Sports, what y'all got going on Monday night?
Well, this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, of course, you guys can catch the One Ten Nation Sports show Monday through Wednesday, 8 to 10. This week we got Dr. Patrick Strapoli joining us Monday night. Driver Austin Wayne Self Monday night. Tuesday night we got driver Justin Fontaine. And Wednesday night we got driver Dylan Lumpkin joining the show.
Question real quick. Austin Self, is that Michael's brother?
I don't know if they're related. I only thing I remember about Austin is we've had him on the show, and he was one of those drivers that had the Donald Trump stuff all over his truck. but I don't know if there's a relation to Michael Self or not.
Okay, I was just curious.
Well, Justin Fontaine is the nephew, I believe, of Chris Fontaine, and we are big fans of Chris Fontaine. It goes back to the first time my wife and I went to a Talladega race, and our first race that we actually seen was a truck race, and watched Fontaine go from the back near the front in an old Bobby Hamilton. What number was it, sweetie? 86? I think it was a numbered 86 car truck. So, big fan of the Fontaines, and I'll have to listen in on that Justin interview. I know he's a returning guest as well, right, CJ?
That's correct.
All right. Mike, what you got going on this week?
I got two invites. I'll know more hopefully tomorrow with two drivers, twins, who drive at Stafford, and I'm also trying to get Jeff Gravatt on, who is a PR man for Wall Stadium and also has a marketing business that he sets up sponsorship packages for drivers. So it should be a good show. That's my two invites this week.
All right, sounds good. Guys, we want to thank y'all for listening to this special edition of Race Chat Live with 110 Sports Nation. Make sure that you're sharing this around and comment below. We should have had some poll questions and stuff up, but we'll call out who we think is going to be our favorite Thursday night in the first part of the show. But we're really looking forward to the next episode of Race Chat Live. And we want to make sure that you guys are listening along with us. So give us a shout out and make sure that you're around your Facebook or your radio on Thursday night, February 15th. And we want to thank you again for listening. Go ahead, CJ.
Quick question. While we got the listeners on Sunday night, are we having a Daytona 500 show? So we are. I was wanting to know the listeners already know.
I vote yay. I mean, I'm not going to say nay.
All right, so next Sunday night, the 110 Nation Daytona 500 show. Make sure you guys tune in 7 o'clock next Sunday night.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, and we're in our second time that we've gone over into our fourth segment. It's really nice. I said to Craig the other day that you back in the olden days, we really knew when we had a good show because we would go into the fourth segment. Of course, I go in 30-minute segments, and so this is the second hour, the fourth segment, and it just shows that we're really having a good time and things are gelling, and once again, it proves that when you go in that fourth segment, you really had a good show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see y'all Thursday. And y'all have a great show Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Good night.